This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:16 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn. It's time now for our final story of the day. And we thought it would be a good time to look at what happened over the weekend as far as the G7 summit went and what the outcome was, because they did release a statement of sorts at the end of it. And of course, G7, right? The world leaders from US, France, Japan, Canada, Italy, Germany, and the UK met in Cornwall, in the southwest city of Cornwall. And this three-day summit, as it always is, was meant to discuss economic and international policies and some of the main initiatives that have emerged from it. A pledge to donate 1 billion COVID-19 vaccine doses to poorer countries, placing global minimum taxes on multinational corporations, and boosting action against climate change. Now, I think one of the frequent criticisms in some ways of the G7 is whether it is effective. It is, after all, a small group. It is a small group of wealthy countries sort of meeting up and talking about these things. So on the one hand, you have this question of what is actually achieved. On the other hand, there is that of whether or not it's too vague. Because while I did say that there were three main initiatives, among others, that showed up after the discussion throughout the weekend, nonetheless, the pledges are just that, right? They're pledges. There isn't really necessarily a strong means to ensure that what is pledged is actually going to happen. Something else that came up that I think is of interest is the response to China, or the perceived statements towards China in the final communique, which looked a lot at country moving away from economic dependence on China, a discussion about human rights and the like. So again, just interesting to see how everybody's going to respond to this. We are going to be diving in shortly into the meeting itself and its outcomes, what it can actually achieve, as well as looking forward to NATO. But we want to know whether you have any thoughts. Were you following the G7 summit? You can let us know by WhatsApping 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at PFM Radio. We'll be back for more on this shortly. In the meantime, just a little bit of music.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, it is 7:21. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn, and we're closing our show today by taking a look back at the G7 summit that concluded over the weekend. Joining us now is Boon Nagara, Senior Fellow at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies. Boon, thank you so much for speaking with us.
You're welcome.
So first off, I covered this very briefly earlier, but can you walk through the format of the G7 and what usually takes place over the course of the 3 days?
Well, the G7 as a group started in 1975, supposedly the seven leading economies of the world at that time. At that time, actually, the Soviet Union was still around, and it was the second biggest, but it was not included, mainly because of politics, you know, ideology. It was not a Western-type democracy and so on. China was number nine. But now, of course, China is the second biggest economy. Russia is also there among the top, but it's been out since 2014 because of Ukraine having left. I mean, Crimea having left Ukraine to join the Russian Federation. But this recent summit in the past few days has really focused on U.S. and Biden's leadership, because very easily this summit could have been done remotely, because with COVID-19 and so on, travels, you know, should not be encouraged, as everyone says, and they would jet around still and adding to the climate issues. So, but it was important for Biden, as it was his first, and to mark a difference from the Trump administration that had gone before. There was, you know, very unaccommodating of allies. So it's about the U.S. allies and Biden working with allies on various global issues. So that has been followed by NATO summit and, of course, Biden's meeting with Putin in Geneva on Wednesday.
So With the G7, one of the most pressing topics discussed was, of course, actually both the things that you mentioned, COVID-19, the pandemic, as well as climate change. If we look at COVID-19 specifically, what were some of the highlights around that discussion?
Well, this is actually to make the members of G7 look much better on the world stage, because some of them, as you know, have hogged the supply of vaccines and acquired more than they needed. And now they, you know, because of vaccine diplomacy, which is very useful, it has decided to as a group, to provide more vaccines to the poorer countries. This requires solving several practical problems that have not been addressed by the summit, unfortunately. For example, the amount that was pledged of 1 billion doses, the WHO says this is not enough. This is actually less than 10% of what the world needs, even to vaccinate 70% of the world's population by the middle of next year. And also the problem of distribution, especially to poorer countries which lack refrigeration facilities when vaccines need to be refrigerated to very cold temperatures, some of which. And, these are some of the practical problems that have not been addressed at the summit.
And if we were to take a look at the other thing that was talked about, the global corporate minimum tax of 15%, it's been described as historic. What might this potentially mean?
Well, basically, it's about trying to recoup some of the funds that the governments of the G7 countries believe they have lost through tax avoidance, if not also tax evasion by rich corporations and individuals. It's one thing to say that, they want to enforce and implement this, but it's another to actually get it done because big businesses do have undue influence in governments. And we'll just have to see whether it works or not. It's very nice to hear this, but we still have to see the results.
If we look at this issue of climate change, which you brought up and which is always a key focus at the G7, how impactful are the resolutions that we actually see formed during the meeting? And what do you make of what they came up with this year to boost climate financing?
Well, again, this is another area that is seen to be lacking generally, because the pledge has been to provide $100 billion worth a year to help with, climate change, carbon emissions and so on, especially for the less developed countries. But, this is, again, a drop in the ocean. This is something which is insufficient and, especially coming from the G7, it is again very vague, no firm promises of anything. And you remember 9 years ago when the G7 had its summit, at that time the G8, the group itself was described as being cash strapped. So now after the COVID lockdowns, economies of all these countries have also been affected adversely. As a result, cash is even less available. So again, we need to wait and see whether this actually happens at all, because again, sounds nice to say, but the action is what really matters.
So we started off this conversation referencing US President Joe Biden, and he called for a more united front in competing against China and the global economy, also mentioned human rights abuses. China, as you rightly pointed out, is not part of the G7, despite being one of the world's leading economies. What is the impact of these statements?
Well, You might notice that the U.S. administration, Biden's team at the G7 summit has not actually gone very far in saying what it needs to do or what it wants to do with China, competing on various areas and so on, because the G7 members themselves are divided on what to do and how far to go on China in terms of competition and so on. So it's better not to go too far into detail again when there may be disagreements among the members along the way, so it doesn't work well for the opportunities. So in the end, again, sketching out a very rough outline in terms of generalities rather than anything in detail.
Do you ever see China being part of a G8?
Well, it depends really on how the members themselves want the group to go, you know, and where it want to go at collectively. If they were to look at it pragmatically, in very technical terms, in terms of the size of economies, the influence of governments, and so on, then you know, they will need to include the 7, 8, 9, or 10 most influential countries in the world. And to a large degree, this kind of practical approach has been undertaken already by the G20, where China and Russia are members. Now, even before China becomes a member or not of the G7, 8, 9, or 10, there are also arguments about whether Russia should be re-included in the G7 to make it the G8 as it was before. Right now, certain countries in the G7 are already in favor of Russia returning to the G7 to make it the G8. Trump in the US was in favor. Italy is in favor. Japan is in favor. Germany, part of it is in favor. The other part, well, because it is coalition government, some of the German leaders do not agree, but some do. So again, G7 members are divided on this. So whether China, Russia, or any other country were to be included is something that remains to be seen, but doubtful, because a lot of the practical issues that are being handled and need to be handled are already done by the G20.
Boon, we have very little time left with you, but I just wanted to know, you know, what can we expect from NATO, which is taking place today?
Usual, talking about, you know, Western military and defense interests, issues like that. And I'm sure Russia would figure quite prominently in that. So, and this would lead on to Biden's summit with Putin in Geneva on Wednesday. So we'll have to see.
Boon, thank you so much for speaking with us.
You're welcome.
That was Boon Nagara, Senior Fellow at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies, taking us through the G7 summit that took place over the weekend. And now on to the news.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.